It's odd. I feel like I know you more than I know a lot of my family members. Just because
Dom is a listener.
I'm a listener, and I'm huge on parasocial relationships, which I'm sure we'll get into here in a second with Taylor Swift and everything. But just know I've already created a whole entire friendship with you in my head.
Oh, yeah. She's my parasocial enemy. I just want to say parasocial relationships can go negative too.
Record that you bought me like 2 years ago, but I just remember that it's sitting in the closet, so I called you up just to tell you I've been meaning to listen to that. I've been meaning to listen to that. Why don't you come over and talk about it? Ooh, ooh, ooh. Why don't you come over? Talk about it.
So, hey everybody, I've been meaning to listen to that.
That was
the podcast.
Good. That's maybe my favorite joke you've ever done, yeah. Andrew.
That was a good one.
Welcome to I've been meaning to listen to that, the podcast where we go through albums we've been meaning to listen to and use it as a conduit to learn about each other and our guests. I'm Andrew Ambrose Lee.
I'm Michael Imitato.
I'm Harper Thompson.
Yeah. And before we introduce our lovely, wonderful guest who promised to keep quiet for the rest of the show, but he's going to before we do that, Michael shook me awake and said, I got a new segment, bro. I got a new segment.
A new segment.
Yeah.
It's called What Mindset Is Michael In, based off of the last five albums he's been listening to on Spotify.
All right.
I was looking at this and it was a true, yeah, that's the shortest I can possibly make it. It is a true lineup of, in my opinion, worst of the worst. So to round it up, right before the episode, I was not, of course, listening to the album where you're about to speak on. I was, of course, listening to Sabrina Carpenter's Let Me Move You from what was it called? That movie she was in.
What you're talking about.
Oh, the Netflix film Work It. That was number one. Okay. Following up. I'm sorry, guys. It is, again, not Taylor Swift. Right after that was Feed the Beast, the Kim Petras album.
Okay.
And then following right behind, of course, what else could it be but You and I, Rita Ora's third studio album. Is it good? No. Have I listened to it a lot? Yes, I have.
Okay.
Okay. Rounding it up at number four, the one, the only, T Swizzle herself. Taylor Swift with Speak Now, Taylor's version.
Okay.
Rounded out by Bunny is a Rider, Remix EP. Of course, I was listening to all four in a row, over and over.
So what does this say about your mood? Like, what are you trying to communicate? What cry for help are you trying to bring out?
I don't know. That's the part of the segment that you guys get to do.
Okay. And we're going to do this every week, you said?
Yeah, every week. Okay. I have canceled my further therapist appointments and we'll just be doing this.
All right. Time to get my... by the way, that's the end of the segment. Great job.
Yes.
We got this great guest. You might know him from the Happy Medium Club, a newsletter. It's Tom Johnson, everybody!
It's me. Hello.
Hi. You're the problem. It's you.
It is.
Famously.
Dom, Andrew did ask if you and I had dated before, and I said extremely briefly. And then I said, will that be part of the plugs? Yeah. Like, will that be how you intro Dom?
Let's hash it out.
What went wrong? What's the like, let's
too similar.
We're clones. We share most of the same DNA, so in a few ways it was philosophically ancestral. Am I allowed to, is that weird?
No, I would agree. I would have to say it was a bad chaotic energy that could not exist in the world.
Amen. Mm-hmm. And for that, I'm grateful because look at us now.
Look at us now. Still friends.
Yeah.
Sometimes enemies.
Friends like we're lesbians that dated. That's my problematic joke of the day.
We only get one problematic
of the day?
Joke.
Yeah, of the day.
All right.
No more for the rest of the episode for me.
All right. So, but yeah, we're here to talk about Speak Now, Taylor's version. I asked Dom and he was super excited to be on this. And I felt, and also like Michael had at one point said, like, you should get Dom on for a Taylor Swift episode. So before we get started on this album, let's talk to you, Dom, a little bit about your relationship to Taylor Swift. Like, what is your history of her? What are your current thoughts on her? You seemed very invested and very into what she, who she is as an artist and stuff like that. But I want to hear a little more specifically.
For sure. Well, I'll put it this way. Every like screaming argument I've ever had with boyfriends, at work, with family, has been about Taylor Swift.
At work?
Yes. One time, several times, but specifically one time in the cafeteria, I was just like casually talking to my coworker, like I'm talking to you guys about Taylor Swift. And I sort of like, this happens to me all the time, I black out, and the next thing I know, I'm screaming at someone about how Taylor Swift is an icon and you're sexist if you don't think so, or just the most absurd. I don't have, and I'll back up here in a second, but I don't have any nuance. I don't have any chill. And I truly love Taylor Swift so much that I feel like I know her. I do not like this album at all, which I will talk about in a second.
Wow.
But it's okay. Sometimes your friends, sometimes your lovers do things you don't like.
Dom, you have swept, you've like, you got on one hand and swept your feet under my legs just now.
Truly, truly like her. And I do feel a sense of parasocial shit that I probably should work on a little bit. But the thing that I think got me into Taylor Swift as an artist and as a musician in general is just like, this is going to be so fucking cliche, but like the storytelling. And specifically, as a writer, the thing that I try and sort of aspire to, which is something I try and pull through Happy Medium Club, is like the concept of approachability, accessibility, and, you know, making content or art that's digestible for as many people as possible. And I know that's something that people are appreciating a lot more now than they used to, but I remember like hearing Taylor Swift sing about some blonde ass boy, and she says like, I'm laughing on a park bench thinking to myself, hey, isn't this easy? And like the amount of times I've quoted that line to my therapist of like, that's what I'm looking for in like a relationship or a work or whatever. So I guess like what I love about Taylor Swift is she's always taken these things that are so big and made them like as small as you want them to be or as big as you want them to be. Yeah, I like that.
I feel like, you know, your relation, like in general, like people's relationship with older Taylor Swift kind of has to do with the, when they got into her, right? Like I was going to say, like, I do feel like I'm a Taylor Swift fan, but I didn't become like full force, like this is my entire identity until 1989. Like when that album came out, that's when I became a real, you know, Swiftie. And so I had to kind of like work backwards to develop a relationship with her older albums instead of like, you know, the experience of, you know, having grown up with them and having them be a part of me, you know. So I feel like that makes a difference.
For sure. Same on, ironically, that my favorite album is Reputation, which is what was playing whenever Michael and I dated for 2 weeks.
That's true. That's the exact amount of time I gave Andrew also for plugs, just so you know.
Good times. It was a great 2 weeks, but I totally agree. I was like a marginal Taylor Swift fan in middle school and high school, and there were like a few songs and moments that stuck out to me, but I didn't like become pathological till Reputation. I don't necessarily love like country music, so like being able to access that previous stuff has been a little bit more difficult, but that's okay because she makes new shit every other week, so I don't necessarily need
it. Did you know Ice Spice is going to be on every single one of these songs next week?
Awesome. Just like, back to December all the time. Facts. Stop playing with him, Ryan. Like, but yeah, like, what about Michael? Like, we've talked about this multiple times, but where are you with her now? I guess you seem to have a more antagonistic parasocial relationship these days, but like, where are you?
I've always she's one of the few celebrities I am constantly on the brink with. Like, I'm just like, I have the like no patience for her whatsoever. If I see one tweet about her, I will absolutely lose it. You know what I saw yesterday? The picture of her holding the wine glass with her hand absolutely so tight, and it made me crush the glass I was drinking my water out of. I got furious. I cannot see that picture ever again.
This is the angriest I've ever seen Michael for the 3 years I've known him. So, like,
all that being said, though, history with Taylor Swift wise, this is the album for me, for Taylor Swift.
Wow. I
think this is the one she wrote all herself. This was like when she was getting that criticism of like, oh, she's like kind of like puppet on a string industry plant, right? And she is an industry plant, but she does have talent. She can say like so much and so little, and she does that really well. Like, I feel her 19-year-old emotions. I felt like this came out when I was feeling all the same stuff myself too. Like, you know, Speak Now, the concept of standing up at a wedding to like fight for your love, that is the teenageriest shit of all time. The concept of stealing someone stealing your man, that is teenager stuff.
Yeah.
And I love it. I cannot get enough. I loved in the old version of it, her fake country accent, the way she sang Mean, where she's like, ye with your words like knives and swords and weapons that you use against me. Like, it's amazing. I miss her fake country accent. Like, sorry, Taylor Swift. I'm going to have to side with, instead of the 900 millionaires, the billionaires, and listen to the old version of Mean, because why are you doing your fake country accent? I think she says a lot of stuff that's like such an interesting turn of phrase on this. I'm gonna a little bit borrow this thought from Pop Pantheon, who talked about this as well. DJ Louis the 14th, think he's great. But he talked about how she could do like so much with so little, like with Mine, saying you made a rebel of a careless man's careful daughter. Doesn't that, like, that says like a novel about a person in the chorus of the song? Like, come on.
Do you feel like with so I totally agree about the teenageriness of this album, right? Like, she was like 18-19 when she wrote most of these songs. Do you feel like something is kind of lost with the Taylor's version of it, where she's like 33 re-recording this? Because I feel,
of course,
yeah.
And I've talked about this a lot, and I know we're definitely going to talk about this like during the episode, so I don't know how much to get into it, but like going back in and changing the lyrics of songs, especially when it's not even problematic, like, is kind of a thing that I'm like, yes, it's misogynist, but do teenagers say that all the time? Yes. You know, like, it reminded me, have you guys seen No Hard Feelings, the Jennifer Lawrence?
Yeah. I've seen that. It's
okay. She's at this house party and these guys are like bullying her, right? And she's like, hey, how about you leave me alone and suck his dick? And they were like, and then one of the guys goes, whoa, that's homophobic, and like starts recording her, you know? And it's like, come on. Can't people say mean things about gay people sometimes as an insult? Like, I don't know.
It's only fair. We're disgusting.
I'm surprised it took her this long to change one line. You know, it's like of the three so far, it's like, you know, she's been pretty faithful up to this point. And I do agree.
Okay, but she didn't do, I'll tell man you're gay.
We didn't get to there. We didn't get there yet. Maybe she put it back.
I hope she does.
You know what I think she will do? I think she'll like keep it in for like one day and then change it to like the
true experience. Yeah. Oh my god. On release day it's that, and then everyone's like, oh, it's a Mandela effect. Remember when she said you're gay?
Yeah, like, I will say, to Harper's point, of course there's something lost. Like, there's a difference between a 20-year-old seeing this like earnestly and then a 33-year-old reflecting on what she said at 20. But I do think Red's the best example of it, where like it gets better with the age stuff. And this one's a little in the middle. This one's kind of like Dear John gets better because she's now the age of like around the age of John Mayer when, mm-hmm. you know, he dated her and stuff like that. Yeesh. Where like, yeah, you should have like that. Now that wasn't cool and whatever. But like, there's not a lot of that here. There's not a lot of like, it's pretty straightforward. It feels like this is the third re-record of six re-records she has to do. It's like kind of like, oh God, I gotta go. you know, I gotta.
Another thing about Speak Now that is just kind of like awkward with this re-record is like the vocals are just too clean. And I think she's losing something that was like very 2012 yeah. pop country.
Yeah, it does sound too nice. It does definitely sound too nice.
Yeah,
it's like a 4K like re-release of yeah. it, like the same thing. I just like of like a movie that came out in the 80s, and like it did look like that. You know, like yeah. you know?
There's like a weird juxtaposition of like, okay, the thing I do not like about this album is like a really specific kind of guitar riff that's like super pop country of like, I hate that shit. And to like have that right next to like the most crystal folklore sounding like vocals, I'm like, I'm having a panic attack right now.
She needs to be doing the fake country voice.
She needs to be doing the fake country voice, exactly.
So here's my like, I have this fun thought, like framing device for the re-releases and stuff like that, the re-records, the Taylor versions and stuff like that. And with these re-releases, there are four ways it could go. There are four potential like outcomes for this whole venture. Okay. So one, and like, I'm going to frame it through Disney reboots, basically. I'm going to frame it that way. So option one is the Lion King reboot. It's a soulless recreation of the thing, the original, and it can't reach the same heights because of the technological limitations and the limits of the medium. So like the idea that she's re-recording it again, and she's 32, 33, and she can't quite recreate the magic of that. Like, and some people on Reddit are complaining about that. I think I've never listened to the original version. I've never listened to it. And I never will. Like, so it is like me watching like Star Wars for the first time in like 2023 or something like that. I'm going, oh, interesting, you know? So like, and then like the other option is like The Force Awakens, the crowd pleaser that satisfies long-term fans while also having some new elements to keep it fresh. Like Kylo Ren's a great character, like all that stuff is pretty cool. Like, and I think Fearless Taylor's version does that. That's what that did. Like, it's just pretty straightforward. There's the novelty of like, wow, she's doing this and fuck Scooter Braun, bleh, all that stuff. And there's also like Mr. Perfectly Fine. There's that song in there. Yeah, so like, yeah. That's new. Yeah. So then there's like the Last Jedi option where it introduces new ideas to an older work that completely changes the meaning of the original while forging new ground. And that's what Red Taylor's version did. That's what that did. Like the fact that you took your best song and made it 10 minutes and changed the meaning of that song and it worked is what The Last Jedi did. And then there's like The Rise of Skywalker, where it's this frenzied reactionary scrambling against backlash that pleases very little, very few people. So like the Karma remix is that. It's just like, huh, like my boyfriend's in trouble. I gotta do this. Or even if that wasn't it, even if it wasn't about Matt Healy and they planned it a year ahead, it is kind of like trend chasing and just like, this is the 1 year Ice Spice will be a thing.
How would they have planned it a year ahead? Did she like find Ice Spice on TikTok before anyone else recorded the Karma re-record?
Yeah, we'll see.
Like, foresight.
I also wrote here, somehow Ed Sheeran has returned. Like, so that's just like an unrelated joke. So... So yeah, like, but I think I think Speak Now, Taylor's version is kind of in the Force Awakens version. Just like these little piggies will eat this up, and like I'll add a little, like I'll add a little something new and stuff like that. She's not like really doing a reinvention of the wheel like she did with the Red Taylor's version. It's just kind of like, hey, I'll just tack on these bonus tracks. I'm going on tour. I'm prepping my movie. I got to do other stuff. So yeah, it's like, I think that's
what movie at. Amsterdam.
No, I think she's like a director movie like later. So oh, like she's prepping that. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause
she's all,
cause her music videos are so good. I need to see a feature film.
Oh, come
that.
On.
Michael. She did directors on directors with Martin McDonough. for Variety last year. It was like a 40-minute conversation.
Hell yeah.
I think she'll be a great director. I do think she will be a great director. I think she
will. Michael, when she gets the EGOT, you're going to die.
That's the IBM TLTT promise. I'll drive my car off a bridge when she EGOTs.
Thank you, promise.
I don't care.
When she EGOTs, I got to go.
Oh, yeah. T-shirts.
I don't know if that's... I don't know if that's worth it. So, like...
when she EGOTs, I got to go. You don't like that?
I don't know if that's, like, worth asking a company to, like, do this for us. let's... Any other, like... preconceived notions on Taylor Swift, any other things or theories or anything else you want to say, like, preconception wise before we get into themes of this record?
I feel like maybe this falls more into themes, but I remember at the time when, like, this album was coming out, right? Like, the way, and I mean, not that there isn't still gossip surrounding Taylor Swift, but the way it was always like, oh, she's dating another celebrity guy right now, right? Like, I have a very vivid memory of being in line at Bigfoot Rapids at Knott's Berry Farm, like, talking about how she was dating Tom Hiddleston. Like, you know, that was, like, such a huge part of culture. But, like, listening to this now and realizing that she was 19 when she wrote these songs, and she's talking about relationships with Taylor Lautner, Joe Jonas, and John Mayer all on this one album. Like, it's not like in a gossipy way, but genuinely, like, how crazy it is that she lived so much life so young.
Yeah.
Just because she, you know, started recording when she was like 15 and she, like, became famous so young. That she just had all of these relationships. It's just, it's like, now that I'm older, now that I'm, you know, an adult who's way past 19 years old, rather than, like, at the time I would have been like 14 or 15 or whatever, and just thinking like, oh, Taylor Swift is this adult celebrity having adult relationships. Like, you know, 19 is not an adult, and it's insane that all this happened to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every time I read about, like, what the specific song is about, I like it a little less. I kind of like the universe that, like, she's so good at, like, writing these universal, like, wow, like you were talking about, like, the fucking, you know, like, hey, isn't this easy? That line is so beautiful. And, like, the line about the song, the story of us apparently is, like, running into John Mayer at the CMA Awards. And, like, I'm like, it's like every time I, like, read that, I'm just like, oh, okay. Like, it's like that kind of takes the magic away from it, where she's, like, such a, I don't know. She has this, like, elemental, like, fairy tale, like, writing to her, like, which it is brought down to earth with just, like, it's about Taylor Lautner. It's about Taylor Lautner. It's not about when they dated for, like, they met on the set of Valentine's Day. They met on the set of Valentine's Day, and they dated for a brief time, and then a Twilight Saga was going on at the same time. You know, it's like, it feels like it's not as interesting.
I have mixed feelings, or I guess conflicted feelings about it, because I totally, like, I don't want music to become, like, PR tabloid, like, I don't know, it's distracting. But on the other side, Phoebe Bridgers, like, has this quote about how she likes to write songs. And it's, oh, just
here,
like,
here we go.
I'm just I'm gonna start screaming. But she starts to
I need to go back to my little room real quick. Just
she just says the easiest thing to do is just, like, write what happened, and, like,
yeah.
Sometimes you don't even need to, like, figure out, like, a fancy way to say it. But, like, with Phoebe Bridgers, she's like, I drank a beer in the shower and there was a helicopter in the sky. And, like, everyone in her concert is just fucking crying. So, I don't know. I think that it's, like, it's so, I guess, to be, like, such an A-list celebrity. And, like, I'm sure every musician draws from their relationships or their life experiences. And, like, if she can't write about her boyfriends, what can she write about?
I don't think, like, that's, like, the point I'm against. I actually like that's, like, because that's her life and, like, that's all this stuff. I just, like, the, like, reading about it, I just get a little like, oh, okay. And then And then when she plays into the reactionary part of it is when I get like less interested. Like,
yeah, that's tough. And she's a perpetual onliner. She is always online and only sometimes responding. That's the thing that really gets me. And it's like either never respond or always respond. But I don't think always respond is actually the good answer. I think never respond is the answer all celebrities should do. But I get the sense, like when she did, you know, Snow on the Beach, parenthesis, more Lana Del Rey. I'm like, that's an online way to phrase this. Like,
so let's go through themes of this record. Like, what do you feel is this? What do you feel this record is about and such?
I actually realized yesterday that I didn't know why it was called Speak Now until I was like looking at the lyrics while I was listening to it. And I feel like very stupid.
Why? Because the song Speak Now is so subtle.
That's the thing. Okay. It's like some of these songs are so distracting because like of all their manner, country duty, looty footy stuff that like I miss like the major themes of this song. Like I didn't realize that.
Dom, you dislike my favorite thing about Taylor Swift, which is why I dislike her more and more, is her being a fake country star. That's what I love the most about Taylor Swift. Her number one trait.
It made me want to chop
real at the tie, and then she grew into a different artist. I think that's what happened. I don't think she was fake as an 18-year-old.
Yes, kid. She absolutely was. She was the fakest 18-year-old I've ever seen.
I don't know. I think she's one of the great artists of all time. Like, I think she's...
You know, I actually think so too, but I also will hate on her. I am, you know, everyone needs adversity in their life to get better, and I am willing to be that in the world. I think she's a genius at 19 to be able to put these like teenager emotions into these songs. Like, her not having writers on it is what makes me actually think she is one of the big artists, because this album speaks so well to this part of like your life. Like, this is probably the part of my brain that is still around the most, you know, like I remember all this so clearly, you know. All these feelings, and it's like, whoa, I was really crazy back then, or not crazy, I was really like, I don't know, emotional back then. My emotional response was always first, and that's what I like the most about these songs.
I feel like also like the reason why we all as like fans of Taylor can be like really critical of her is because she is so good, right? Like, you know, it's, she's just, I mean, like whether you like her or not, it's undeniable that she writes some just like kind of incredible stuff. So, you know, it's the only reason why I ever feel the need to criticize her is because I know that she's a genius.
And she has such a wide, some people like this, some people don't, but she has such a wide birth of genres. So like,
totally.
And then a lot of them are the exact opposites of each other. So I don't know. If you love something inherently, you're going to sort of hate its opposite, which is why I want Speak Now to sort of just like dissolve. No, I'm being hyperbolic, but.
It is like she created like Disney World, like Taylor Swift World.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like different parts of the park that people like more or less than other parts of the park. Like she is like a creative like world builder, like George Lucas, like Stan Lee, like J.K. Rowling and all these people. Like genuinely, like she is like, she created like worlds with her brain and it made millions and millions of dollars. Like it all worked out.
In Taylor Swift Disney World, do they poop on the ground and then magic it away?
What the hell?
That is one of the famous things J.K. Rowling said in a tweet that is actually true about Harry Potter, that no one uses restrooms and they poop on the ground.
And they portkey it away. They like, you know, they make it disappear with their magic.
I'm having another panic attack.
She said so many things.
Mm-hmm. Dumbledore's gay.
I gotta say, I missed that era of the things she said. You know,
yeah. When I looked forward to the crazy thing she would tweet. Yeah.
Every week when she'd put something new on Pottermore.
But yeah, it's like, it's like she's a creative world builder, and it's like a world that emphasizes the beauty, validity, and strength of feminine energy. It's a safe space to commiserate and heal from heartbreak and provide endless inspiration and encouragement to young artists. And the thorniness is like when the idealistic world that these artists create clash with the real world, and like they poison each other. Like, either like they infect each other. Like, at best, like the art that this artist makes the world better. At worst, like the world, like trying to compromise with like corporate America, trying to like all do all this stuff, and just like the fallibility of people, like makes it where like transphobia is now, you can't really think about Harry Potter without thinking about transphobia. You could try, but like it's because like the books don't have that in it, but it's very difficult. It's very like sad. So yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to emphasize why I think she's just a like one of the like top tier like artists working today. So yeah. So let's talk about themes of this record. What do you think this album's about?
I think one of the things that, I guess back to like the speak now phraseology, of like the whole concept of like speak now or forever hold your peace, like that is so, you were saying it earlier, Michael, like it's so teenager to think that like, if I don't seize this moment right now, like my whole entire life will change, my world will be over. And like the way that we were always, and still to some extent, like blowing everything out of proportion, or just like giving so much weight to things that felt world ending, whether they were or weren't. It's like so beautiful. Whether it's good or bad is like not necessarily relevant, but just like the way that she just gives space to the concept of like, if you do not speak now, like you will die. And then the fact that all the songs on this album are solely written by her. So she's sort of like getting a little meta with it, if you will, of like, I had to speak now and like say all this shit or else I would die. Like, I don't know. It's just like equal parts melodramatic and cheesy, but also just like so human. I don't know. It's cool.
Totally agree. I think it really, it's all very like, what's my emotional response to this moment? And what would I do if I acted fully on that emotional response? Like, even the songs that I don't like are kind of have that same theme to it too, right? Like, Never Grow Up, which is terrible, is, you know, about her, you know, wanting her to maintain her own innocence, which I think she probably is re-recording it at 33. Like, this is hilarious. Like, you know, because it is. It's a very storybook, neat, tied up with a bow way to look at life. Like, you know, oh, just stay a little baby. You don't want to pay rent. Little Taylor. This is how we will always talk.
I do think, like, I think what Dom is saying is correct in terms of it's like just like the dramatic nature of being a young person and feeling like if I don't speak now, then, you know, I might die and stuff like that. Like, but it's also like, I feel like another name for this album is like Speak Later. Like, it's like kind of like, it's like, because in the moment she feels like, she strikes me as a very anxious person. She strikes me as someone with like anxious attachment issues and or like just social anxiety, and like put in this position where she's like representing a population and representing like a marginalized group of people and all that stuff. And it's like, so like the song about like, you know, running into John Mayer at the award show, in that moment, she probably didn't speak now. It probably was just like awkward and like depressing and stressful. And then later she wrote the song to articulate the views and then to like put it out there so that she can get catharsis. And same thing with Dear John, same thing with Mean, same thing with like Last Kiss. Like, there's an element of just like, or like the Back to December is just kind of like, I wish I was this way when we were together and stuff like that. It's kind of like more, the songwriting is the way she could articulate and process her intense emotionality and stuff like that.
Andrew, like what you were saying though, she like is doing the musical equivalent of like coming up with a good zinger later.
Yeah.
But like, instead of just being like, that would have been good to say, she's like, I'm going to write the best song you've ever heard.
Yes. it's also like the other themes I just want to quickly cycled through is like, this is an album written by a perspicacious young fool. And I don't mean that in like a
perspicacious.
Yeah. Like, you know, insightful and all that stuff. But like, it's like the idea of just like,
I love Perspicacious, the book series about the demigod who is the son of
Perspicacious
Zeus?
And
Poseidon.
Poseidon.
Rick Riordan. Like Perspicacious Jackson or whatever. But like, yeah, it's like, but like, I don't mean that in an insulting way. I just mean it in terms of like, and she calls herself a fool. Like, she calls herself foolish in the second to the last song. So it's like, it's more just like being young and just like being like, hey, like, don't date John Mayer. Like, don't do that. You know, but like, if you're a young person, you know, of course you're going to date John Mayer. Of course you're going to be swept up in the situation and like find yourself. And like, so it's like gaining wisdom and experience and context. And then, so it's like, it feels like a transition point, like a middle child point between, you know, innocence and, you know, cynicism, like civilian and superstar and pop, country and pop. And it feels like this stepping, it feels like Fearless too, kind of, except now she's kind of got a little more fame, a little more.
Totally agree. She's like, she's putting her foot on the rock that will be red a little bit, where it's like, what if I didn't fully do country? Like, what do you guys think of that? Like, that's kind of where she's starting to go in this album.
Because so much, she's an artist, like an artist, and so much of country is about, I'm going to stay in the same spot. I love my tractor. I love my wife. I love like my hay or whatever, and I'm going to stay in the city forever till I die. Where Taylor's like, I want to go to the big city. I want to see New York. I want to see New York and like never grow up is kind of like, oh, I'm here and I kind of miss being young and stuff like that. So I think it's kind of that too. So any other themes, any other things we want to talk about thematically?
Yeah, I guess like growing up a little bit is one of the themes, because I was reading that like Enchanted was supposed to be the name of the album, but then the producer or something was like, oh, but you're not like this little girl anymore. This is like, you know, the theme of the album is like about there's more grown up stuff on this album than just like fairy tales, which I think is kind of interesting because there is definitely some fairy tale element to this with Enchanted, even like the name of The Story of Us, although that is kind of a little bit about like, you know, moving past a relationship. And then if we do believe that the vault songs actually did come from this time, that's a big if.
No way.
But if we believe that Castle's Crumbling,
I think, like some of them, yeah, like,
was written around this time, then I feel like Castle's Crumbling also kind of fits into that kind of fairy tale. You know, thing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting that the like at the very least she was like being like kind of shepherded in a direction of like, you're an adult now, and some of that I think is like both parts, that I'm a kid and I'm growing up, both of those things are bleeding throughout the album.
I think I have some other themes, but we could get into it in the actual tracks right after this break. Click. And we're back here to talk about Speak Now, Taylor's version by Taylor Swift. Dom, what is a highlight song that you want to talk about?
Dear John is the best breakup song of all time.
Okay.
Is it a breakup song?
I think so.
Yeah, like, I would say. I think the heartbreak and the anger in that song, and like specifically like in the bridge whenever she's literally like screaming, I just got choked up. I don't know. I've never had a relationship end that badly. Sorry, Michael.
It was terrible. Why are you on the podcast?
But for some reason, like whenever I hear that song, I just feel so like angry. But also, am I allowed to have two highlights? Because I want to juxtapose that with Hours. Okay, so the first time I heard this song, Hours, I'm driving with like some high school friends to Winter Jam, which is like this Christian music festival. It's horrible. And like, I'm fully like gay at this point. I'm closeted, still a Christian. It's just like all the just bad feelings.
But you had already chosen to be gay.
I checked that box. gay. But like, to me, that song... And I like had this realization like on the way to this Christian concert. It was like a undercover queer anthem, whether Taylor wanted it to be that or not. But like, it's just about like a forbidden love, but like not really caring and like holding the hand of your lover anyway. And like the song itself is pretty surface level. Like it doesn't go into like giant emotional imagery, but like little closeted Dom could like latch on to that. And like in retrospect, this is so delusional. I thought I could like listen to the song and no one would know I was gay and singing about gay stuff. But in the moment, it was like,
this is like when I brought a CD player on a road trip, and the one of the albums I brought was Demi Lovato's second album.
No,
and everyone in the bus was like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?
What are you, a gay or something?"
Yeah, no, literally. Everyone in my life until I turned 22 being like, "You're gay, right?" And I'm like, I don't know. And then at 22, I'm like, "Guys, I'm gay." And everyone's like, "Uh-huh." Yup.
Lovato, season two. Well, and I like, even, I think part of it was before I'm comfortable even internalizing anything or like engaging with like the depth of any of these like crazy internal conflicts. It's like microdosing sort of like reflection. If you just listen to this
Wow.
little song about this, you know, forbidden love, I'm like, okay, maybe eventually I'll be able to like take the stepping stones to like go to the next level of looking a little deeper. And now I'm listening to Betty. So it's like, I don't know. she's got it all. And I think that's my favorite Taylor Swift song of all time is Hours. Even though I hate this album, I love that song. And I think it's just like quintessential Taylor taking these big concepts and just making it super accessible with a beginning, middle, end story. So
I skip Hours. I go like, not, it's too much. I think like
he's blacking out. His pupils are dilating and
I do think this is like, just, it's too hard to listen to this. Even if I loved all of it, which I like a lot of this, like it's very hard to sit through the entire thing in one sitting. Yeah. Like it's very difficult to, and I don't think it's supposed to be consumed that way either. But like it's like I have to like just like cut songs. I have to go like I skip you, like, yeah, like and stuff like that. So
I can skip you.
Skip
you. I skip. Let's get into. We'll do that in low light. So, Harper, what's a highlight for you?
Before we move on, actually, from Dear John, I do want to say, so that's not a favorite song of mine, but what I love, love, love about that song is that she has John Mayer style guitar in the background, which is so funny.
I didn't even know that. That's amazing.
Yeah. If you listen to it, it's like this kind of like muted electric guitar thing that sounds exactly what John Mayer does. And it's so good. It's a nice touch. Nice touch, Taylor.
It's kind of paying tribute to him, but it's also kind of making fun of him a little bit. Like, this is how you sound.
It's kind of like how Innocent sounds like a Yeezus song.
I was gonna say that.
Nope. But like, it's like, I do think like it's just like so powerful, like just like how she was just like taking advantage of, and then the idea of like on some, like she kind like she feels like she let it happen and stuff like that, whereas like it's not completely her fault. It's like the power dynamic of it all, and it's kind of like using the song as like a way to like kind of once again process the emotions and stuff like that. It's just like these lines about just like, I lived in your chess game, but you change the rules every day. Like, you're an expert at saying sorry and keeping lines blurry, never impressed by me acing your test. The idea that if you meet their weird criteria, then you'll get the love you feel like you deserve. But he's like always changing the rules and moving the goalposts and being like, but being like charming enough to like keep her in enough and stuff like that. So it's really powerful. And it's like, it is like, I'm leaving you, goodbye, but also I love you. I miss you. I'm sorry. You know, it's like, it's messy, like teenage love and stuff like that. It's like mess. It's really good. So
Dear John is the song on this album, right? Like, yeah. It's hard to contest. I feel like, for me, like, this song is so incredible, and it makes the other, like, quote unquote slow songs worse. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah.
Like, it makes Innocent and like Never Grow Up be like, oh, these are so trite. These aren't saying anything. And like, what's amazing about this Taylor's version on Reflection is it's like she can go back and write it and be like, I actually was right about this. You know, it doesn't feel like mean where it's like, what are you even talking about anymore? Right? Like, no one is doing this to you. You know, only Michael Limitato is doing this to you, and you will not write a song.
But also, like, but Dear John is also like honoring what she felt at that time. Like that. And then it's like layered on is like current perspective on top of it. There are times where I forget it's 33-year-old Taylor singing. Like, I forget sometimes. I go like, whoa, it's like, how does she sound that young? Like, that's so incredible. Like, you know, it's like, I don't know. But like, Harper, you wanted to, you didn't say a highlight. What was the highlight for you?
Enchanted. This has always been one of my favorite Taylor songs. It's so cheesy, but I love it so much. And I just love
Enchanted to meet a thousand fireflies.
I had no idea that was about Owl City until I was prepping for this episode. And I just wrote LOL in my notes about that one. But I love the lines from this that I really love are, please don't be in love with someone else, please don't have somebody waiting on you. I feel like please don't have somebody waiting on you is such a good line. I don't know, I just love this song. I did use it in a fan video that I made in high school of Naomi and Emily from Skins, if you were there with me for that one. But yeah, I love this song, and because I used it in that fan video, I listened to it a million times while I was editing it, and it's just like burned in my brain for that reason, and I still listen to it now, and I love it.
Some Harper lore you know, for y'all.
A little bit of Harper lore. I love it a lot. Even though I do think it's like maybe not as strong as some other songs on this album, it's the one that will always work for me.
Harper, I just formed a parasocial relationship with you.
Oh, fun.
Is it parasocial if it's in the conversation?
If we're directly talking.
It's some sort of pathological. I'm not sure exactly how it's going to be classified in the DSM, okay? I'm not a doctor, but I just know I would die for you.
I think, like, I love, like, Taylor, like, this album doesn't have as many catchy hooks as, say, Fearless or something like that. Like, just,
not
like,
true!
But I like that, like, you know, turns of phrases are sung in a way that are so catchy. Yeah. Enchanted to meet you. Like, that is so catchy. Like, it's like, yeah. Michael, it's a highlight for you.
Most of this album is a highlight to me. I think
a highlight to me. You
okay. Oh man, this is so hard. I love.
We could do a bunch. You could do a bunch, yeah, or just like a bunch over time.
Okay, can I do like a rapid fire highlights?
Yeah,
like,
go ahead.
I like, and here's why. And then if you have a comment, you can stop me.
Okay.
Mine. It has the amazing. You made a rebel of a careless man's careful daughter. An incredible song. Love it. Immediately gets you in the mood for this album. It says, you know, this is going to be a little childish, but it's like how I feel. And I think mine is so beautiful. I don't know if like relationships actually work like that, but it is amazing. Next up, Back to December. I think people love that song because everyone has regrets, and you can put whatever regret you want on this and be like, what if I went back in time and fixed this? And the fact that it's about Taylor Lautner, you know, think about two people with the same name dating is super fun. So, you know, why not? And he's in you know, they clearly have a good relationship now. Hey, that's the theme of this episode. People who have dated who work on projects together.
Can we talk about Back to December? So a couple things I like about that song are that there are a couple other like country-ish songs that it reminds me of that I really like. At the beginning, the way she says, I'm so glad, it really reminds me of the beginning of You're the One by Shania Twain.
Oh, yes.
There's just she has like a little like, I'm so, you know, it's like, I'm so glad we made it. But that's a Shania. But anyway, it sounds kind of like that. And then the chorus also has a little bit of like Need You Now by Lady Antebellum, Lady A, whatever.
Oh, hell yeah.
And so Yeah. Anyway, so those are two of my favorite songs. So that really makes Back to December work for me, is that it reminds me of those.
The chorus like tumbles out of her like an apology, just like, this is me. Da, 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 da. It's like, so like, there's so many great lines in here. Just like, turns out freedom ain't nothing but missing you. The dark days, like, if the chain is on the door, I understand. Like, they're Drake writes Instagram caption lyrics where Taylor writes Tumblr lyrics. Like, it's like the difference. Yes, like, that's like the difference between the two of them.
Did you know that this is the first song where she apologizes as well in her music career?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's so, like, I think the... there's a part of me that doesn't like, for example, like the revenge song or like the songs where she's like being petty or whatever. But I think it's also valuable that she includes like other emotions, you know. I think it's include, or just like where she's a fallible person, or like, and like there's so many, the most powerful songs on this album are the ones where she talks about being victimized and being like, you know, someone wronged me and it wasn't okay. But like, this is one where she's like, yeah, like this person treated me really well and I messed up and I just want to like, you know, swallow my pride and apologize and hope I can make things right. And she does the thing that people forget to do in apologies and say, if you don't forgive me, that's okay too. I think that's so mature. And yeah, so like the line I want to like talk about here is just like, you gave me roses and I left them there to die, which is like, again, like, tying back to like the anxious attachment and like this person who like maybe has like this like difficult relationship with love. Like, I remember that line reminds me of the time where in middle school there were like these Valentines you give people. Like, you give people, like, you buy for $1 you could buy a rose and you give it to like your crush or whatever. And the girl I had a crush on gave one to me in middle school. I know. And she gave it to me, and then I put it in my locker, my sunless dark locker. I just closed it and I like didn't open it for the rest of the school year. I didn't know what to do with that. I didn't know how to like receive love or receive affection until like, you know, 20 years later or so, you know. It's like,
you know, Andrew, I hate to say this, but might still be working on that bad boy.
I kind of realized through this record, I really like relate to her more than I would like to admit. And maybe that's why I was like a little like resistant to this album. I was like, ugh. I don't know, like whatever she's saying, even though her life is so unrelatable in so many ways. Like, it's, I didn't meet anyone on the set of Valentine's Day, Gary Marshall's Valentine's Day, you know, so like.
I was filmed at a high school that a lot of my friends went to.
And then
Gary Marshall's Valentine's Day.
They all saw Taylor Swift there, and they talk about it to this day.
Oh, of course.
And then, like, I also want to talk about mine really quickly. Like, you made the rebel of the careless man's careful daughter. Like, this, I relate to. Obviously, everyone has their own version of that. Like, everyone is. Especially young women and stuff like that, probably. But like, it feels to me, it feels like just like living with an anxious attachment style and using fantasies and positive memories of the past to cope with the fear of being abandoned. Like, I had a very chaotic childhood where I couldn't depend on my parents for protection. So I cope by being like a goody two shoes, rule follower, good Christian, trying to be exceptionally nice to everybody and trying to make art to prove my worth and value. But when you're in a relationship and you can pull your armor down, it's like euphoric. And when it's threatened, you spiral. And so like it's about the joy of like being reciprocated, of just being like, you're the careless man's careful daughter I fell in love with. But also at the end, it's like, when Harper, you're talking about the, please don't fall in the, at the end, there's still a note of like, desperation of just like, it doesn't go like, and I'm cured, hey, the end. You know, it is like there's the end passage where it's just like, okay, but what about next time? Which is like, and then in the album, the worst thing she feared happens to her and she survives, which is like so beautiful. I think it's so great.
So any other highlights?
My favorite Taylor Swift song of all time is Better Than Revenge, the original version.
Is it really?
I think it's so fun to sing. I think it is incredibly, incredibly fun. I understand that it is misogynist. I want to say that. However, every 19-year-old on earth has said something rude and nasty about someone they, feel bad about. Yes, you have. I promise. Andrew probably said something mean about me when I went to close the door. And what? Not really. I'm just kidding. You're a sweetie, Andrew. But everybody says like a nasty thing when you're 19. Like, I think having to go back and like be like, I'm not a slut shamer. Let me make a weirdly poetic lyric in this song that's about a girl who stole my man. You know, like, it's just so... It bums me out. So the low light is that lyric change. Highlight is it still sounds amazing. So
it does, like Hayley Williams. I saw Paramore perform, and she took out the Misery Business song for a few tours, and then she put it back in, and she does the preface before the show saying like, "Hey, you know, obviously none of us are misogynist." There's something to the effect of like, oh, we're not misogynists here. We're all having fun. And let's sing the song earnestly and stuff like that. And she sings the song pretty straightforward. She doesn't change the lyrics or anything like that. Which is funny because, like, first of all, she has Hayley Williams on this album. Second of all, like, she says she's...
Does she though?
It's like the whisper of Lana.
I bet there's going to be a 2-in-1 chance. There's going to be Taylor Swift, Speak Now, Taylor's version, whispering at 5 a.m. version, where more Haley, parentheses, ugh, in the vault, parentheses, hey, more Haley's here to sing another verse or something like that. Or like,
is Taylor she's a little louder in the mix. Is Taylor just horrendous at collaborating with women? Like, she's like, okay, now it's my song, remember.
Yeah, I don't know. But like, she did it with like the Phoebe song. That was a good example. Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. Commas of dance on the mouth. But like,
facts.
I just don't like the production. Like, I don't care about the misogyny. I don't really care about like the...
Who cares?
Not a good... Don't pull that quote. But like, I don't really care about that. I don't really care about like, being offended or whatever. I'm just more like, I just don't like that type of song. I don't like that type of like pop punky, like, it feels like that Tim Robinson song in like I Think You Should Leave, like shirts and ties, tell me lies, just like kind of like that. Like, it feels like that. It just feels like, I don't know. It feels too...
I think if you go back to the Here We Go Again Demi Lovato album, it has that exact sound.
Yes.
And I was really into that back then. And maybe I'm not seeking this kind of music out now, right?
Like, yeah.
But this song, when it comes on, I'm like...
Yeah.
We were just on vacation with Hayden's family last week, and I was taking a shower, and that came on, and I was like, wow! And everyone was like, you like Taylor Swift? And I was like, just that album.
I wrote down about the song that, like, I thought it was kind of interesting that it was written in 2010, because it sounds very, like, 2004 Avril Lavigne through 2007 Paramore to me. Like, it feels a little late for that kind of guitar production, But I enjoyed it. It feels a little late.
Yeah, but also like a church girl doing it. Like some like, like mousy church girl version of that. It's like...
She actually performed it for the first time at Winter Jam.
But it's like, I feel like the worst songs are like ones where she goes for stadium rock. Of just like the stadium. Like, first of all, it's crazy that third album she's playing for stadiums. Ridiculous. Like Nepo Baby stuff. But whatever. So I think when she's in that zone, it's like she's a little less like, I think she does a better job with like 1989 and like, I don't know, those later albums where she's doing a little better with that. But yeah, that's kind of goes into my low lights. Any other highlights that we've been talking about?
I Can See You is good. As far as vault tracks go, it's catchy. It's interesting. I'm glad I got the single treatment. But wait, which one was that one? Tracks.
The
I can see bounce. Oh, that's so fun. Yeah,
I think that's that doesn't fit on Speak Now really, but like it's
and it's very sexy for 19 as well.
Yeah, I feel like the chorus a lot more, which sounds very different than the verses on the song. Like the verses are the kind of like sexy sounding, like, you know, swoopy noise, but then the chorus is like, I mean, the chorus has sexy lyrics. It's like, I can see you up against the wall with me or whatever, but it feels like the choruses sound more like the rest of the album than the
I agree
do.
Fully agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The like beachy like brown brown guitars are very like not cohesive.
But like it's like I love that song's fun because like the it's come back for like a sexy 32-year-old Taylor version of it, like, which is like really, it's like the Millennium Falcon, like seeing that in the new Star Wars, going like, "Whoa, remember?" Like, I remember that. That was pretty cool. Yeah, let's go through lowlights and then we go into final thoughts. We can go to like preconceived notions, like just like straight observations and stuff. What's a lowlight for Dom?
The worst song of all time. That I hate is Superman. I hate that song.
Yes, it's so bad.
Is that about her? Is that about her dad? Like, what is that about? Yes. Like, oh yeah, I don't like
it's
it.
Not.
No, it is.
It is. I was reading that it was about some guy who she wanted to get back with or something.
That's even worse. It's. It sounds like a
okay. They song. Should. Those two should not have sex because that guy is her dad. I hate that song. I
skip
it. In my Thomas Jefferson version of this album, it is cut out and discarded. It sucks. It
Thomas Jefferson? Like,
you know how he did that to the bot? Whatever.
You know those toothbrushes they used to have that would like play a song?
The yes. Tooth Tunes?
Yeah. It sounded like a Tooth Tune song. Just like bad and for children and nasty. I don't like that song.
Yeah, it's not good.
I don't like it.
Long Live is kind of, it's a cute song. I do like... There are moments where it feels like, again, I don't mean this as an insult, but like high school English student, like kind of wrote this song. And like, and that's not an insult because she was that age. So it's not an insulting thing. It's actually at this point, the one time it's like an accurate assessment of what that is. But it's just like, this is insane. Just like that moment is just like, oh, like they're just like little moments that like kind of raise the hair on my arm or whatever.
No, there's a ton of bad. As much good lyricism as there is in this, there's terrible lyricism. Like in Timeless, the like if Cleopatra grew up in a small town, like what does that mean?
Yeah,
exactly. There are a lot of lines like that. Yeah,
like okay, she would be Cleopatra in a small town.
Yeah,
like what is she still dressing like the pharaoh? Like I need to. I don't understand. She'd be a girl, a normal girl.
I skip Better Than Revenge, Innocent, Haunted. I skip Hours. I skip Superman. I skip Electric Touch. I skip Timeless. Like that's my condensed version of the album and stuff like that.
You're homophobic. Albert.
Yeah, R's amazing queer love story, a thing I've never heard before and will it's never hear again.
And you're dumb.
One is just too much. It's just too much album, first of all. Like, I just like
so much. Yeah.
I just feel like it, like, just what's it called? Like,
Unga Pachka?
No. Enchanted goes so well into Last Kiss. Like, that, those transition really nicely together. So, like, I just like, it's just like I just really. Those songs aren't that bad. I just don't really want to listen to it.
I would be a different person without Better Than Revenge and Haunted. I'm sorry.
Less misogynistic or whatever.
Yeah. Huge misogynist over here.
So, yeah. Any lowlights? Any other lowlights that we just wanted to point out?
I got to say, Last Kiss is a lowlight for me.
No.
Yeah.
Me too.
That's a hot take.
I wrote, I'm sorry. It's kind of slow and boring. That's really all I got. And that's,
so
I think
I'll
that's,
watch you in your life in pictures like I used to watch you sleep. Like
I
the
will
idea
say,
that, yeah.
It's fully giving Edward in New Moon. Like that is lyrically, that is what's happening in that song.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes. It's also extremely wild after Haunted, where it's like you went on a violin roller coaster and then it's like, now it's time for a little nap.
Yeah,
you know,
like, I think placement is definitely part of the issue for me. Like, I actually enjoy Haunted because it gives me lots of like Kelly Clarkson. You know, I love Kelly.
Very Kelly.
It's very Kelly. So then after coming off of Kelly Clarkson to this very slow song that doesn't do a whole lot for me. And then after that is Long Live, which I know you guys are all kind of lukewarm on that. But I really like that song because it makes me feel good. You know, I feel like Last Kiss.
That's a good reason to like a song.
It makes me feel good. Yeah, I think that's fine. But it.
this is rather good.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, it's a nice time. But yeah, so Last Kiss just feels like a real valley between those two songs for me.
But I think she's like in this stage in her life where she's like dealing with a lot of like heartbreak over and over again. And she's just like. I think like the
and yeah, she didn't know to go to an AMC movie theater to feel it.
They didn't exist back then. They weren't allowed. Any other lowlights? Any other things we haven't talked about?
When Emma Falls in Love is dumb. It's yet another song where we get to hear about the celebrity that Taylor Swift is writing about. I do not care about Emma Stone. Yeah. Official announcement
it's
on
Emma
the pod.
Stone. Okay.
Too
is that real?
Yeah.
Yes, it's very that's
again, like any like tabloid thing I learned about this is like
I don't
my will.
Like it. Yeah. Agreed. Except for when I played you the Owl City version of it, right?
No, that was she great. Was. Yeah. No, we really all love good. That. Like we're all really happy. Like if you can watch the video, we're all smiling. Like we're all we're all grinning and loving it.
Me going, I don't know if you've heard this, immediately share screen.
Never Grow Up is, you said, Michael, that's a low light for you.
Horrible.
It's awkward.
It's so good. It's so good. I love it so much. She freaks out the fact that we're all gonna die one day. It's like that is so I think that's wonderful. I think this it reminds me of like the Mr. Rogers moment where he's like, hey, for Mr. Rogers at the award show where it's like, hey, for 1 minute think about the person who made you the person you are, and I'm gonna we're just gonna sit in that. And I think it's so earnest and so wonderful. Like it's first of all, it's like 15 the sequel, like the song 15, where she's like a young person giving advice to an even younger person. The joke I made in the Fearless episode is like, it's like that John Mulaney joke where, you know, it's like getting your horse to babysit your dog or whatever.
What a good joke.
But it's so perceptive. It's like the idea of take pictures in your mind of your childhood room. Remember these things so that when you get old, what are you doing? Michael's rolling his eyes at the idea.
So dumb.
At the idea remembering your childhood home, remembering details that you can latch onto when your parents are dead. You know what?
Now I like it.
Yeah, it's like the idea that like she's giving advice to this younger person who's like, you're mortified that your mom's dropping you off. Like, and you're embarrassed by it, but remember she's getting older too.
Let your mom drop you off at school. Don't forget your little house.
I hate you.
You're a beautiful baby, and you always will have that beautiful baby inside.
But you won't. Here's the thing. You won't, though. You won't. Like, always have that. It's easy to take that for granted.
Not if you don't believe and take the little mind pictures. Keep those mind pictures in your mind palace.
This voice,
return to
you
it.
Have to stop. I'm going to die again.
And then she turns it on herself. Where it's just like she's in this new city and she's scared and like she kind of goes back to that childhood thing of like turning on the little night lights.
That's cute. I thought it was cringe until this conversation. Now I like it.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like she got like it's also a good sequel to the song Mean, because in the song Mean, she's saying that the critics, all they'll ever be is mean. They're going to like be on Twitter. They're going to be in this space and they're going to torment each other forever in this like bar. And then she's going to be in a big old city. But the big old city's not what it's cracked up to be. It's like, it's also lonely and sad too. It's like,
for sure.
It, and that's the reality of being growing up and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, probably because no one wants to be friends with you.
You are a parasocial antagonist. Yeah. It's
she has Lena Dunham.
The only friend you can get is Lena Dunham.
What's it called? Cara Delevingne or whoever. Like her, all the friends she makes.
Yeah, Ellie Goulding will shoot a rocket launcher for you, as proven in the Bad Blood music video.
Incredible.
Kendrick.
Dr. Goulding. Excuse me.
Kendrick Lamar, you know, her bestie. I wonder if they still hung out. But like, anyways. Like,
to kill Selena Gomez only.
Okay, so that was my Kendrick impression. So,
Andrew, you're so mad at me.
So I think that song's lovely. Any other Shay observations? Anything we didn't talk about?
Well, I guess the last thing about that song is I think she does like either incredible jobs or bad jobs. Not bad. When she sings about her family, it's either like a huge hit for me or miss. Like Marjorie on Evermore, like makes me cry. Oh. And one time I cried at church and everyone thought it was because I was listening to the sermon, but I was actually listening to The Best Day. And
that's all good. That song's so good.
It's so good. She's literally just like, that I went to the mall with my mom today after I got bullied by my friends. And I'm like,
I like that though, because she knows it's trite. And I think this, she's trying to be too grandiose with like, here's the solution to life is what it's kind of pitched as, which I hate.
And I think that ties it with like the teenager of it all of like, she's like writing this like dissertation or like this manifesto on like what it means to grow up, but like you're still 18.
Yeah, I guess it gives. Have you tried not being mentally ill? You know, that's kind of what it gives.
It's like if like Chloe Grace Moretz's character from 500 Days of Summer wrote an album, you know, like that.
Yes,
that gives Joseph Gordon-Levitt advice, like that real person based on a real like conversation.
That's very funny.
Oh, that character
is incredible.
Let's get through Final Thoughts and Ratings. The way this works is we'll rate this out of 10 with a fun metric at the end. So let's start with Harper. Where are you at?
Okay. Well, I got to say this album was too goddamn long. It had some good stuff on it, but like it took me. So I had to take a break in the middle of it while I was trying to take notes. And then I tried to watch the concert, even just for like the not Taylor's version. The concert was over 2 hours long. I don't know. I love Taylor, but sometimes you gotta edit. So, and also there are enough songs in here that don't really do it for me. I'm going to have to give it a 6.5 out of 10 night lights that she turns off for herself in her big city apartment.
Yeah. I think this is one of her least good albums, but it's still brilliant. It's still emotionally resonant. There's still brilliant moments. Like it is a stepping stone where she becomes a mega genius and like the greatest songwriter. Although they're like Dear John, like there are moments where she does reach that peak. I'm realizing more and more I have more in common with her than I'd like to admit. And maybe that's why I was like, when I listened to this first, I hated it. This is like immediately first listen was 5 out of 10. Just like, woof, that's rough. Like I skipped like the middle part of the album. I was like, nope, don't like this very much. But once you kind of get past the genre pastiche of it all, and like kind of dig into the songwriting, even the songs that aren't very good have lines that are really great. But it's like, it's the biggest hurdle is the production and the cheat and the unbridled earnestness is a little too much sometimes. So I'm going to give this, 8 careless daughters, that a careless father made happen with his raising of that child.
Hell yeah.
I think this album is an essential listen for me. If I had to come up with 20 albums that are like albums that formed me, I think this would probably be on the list. It's definitely the only Taylor that would be on this list. I love it. I just love it. Even the bad songs I'll listen to and be like, that sucked. Like, I'm not going to skip it, but I hate it, you know? Like, I think this album's great. It is too long. All the Vault tracks, except for I Can See You, are not good. I also think, you know, the ending does dip a little bit. Like, I think I like the non-deluxe tracks a lot more. Like, that album, if you non-deluxe this and just listen to that, I think you'd like this much more. So I will give this album, because I don't like some the lyric change, I don't like some of the bonus tracks, and obviously there's some dips, I will give this 9.5 perfectly untalked about mattresses out of 10.
I will say, like, this is probably like a 10th year anniversary box set where, like, you get to, like, here's some features that, like, you know, we discover that we didn't put in the original yes. DVD or whatever. And it's like you could edit down, like, what you like and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think, Andrew, that's part of what I think is getting you a little bit with it is, like, you don't, this is your first time listening to this album, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like you're having to hit all these, like, stuff that I know inherently is something I should skip, you know. Mm-hmm. I know the secret, like, potholes in the road, and you don't. You're just driving.
I listen to it all and stuff like that, but it's just, yeah, it's like it is like watching, like, a friend invites me over and, like, hey, we're gonna watch the 5-hour version of Lord of the Rings, we're gonna do that.
Right.
And I lock the doors and we can't leave, you know. So, right. Right. So
I assumed you're wearing your catheter, right?
And we're also gonna, like, read the Silmarillion, like, responsibly or whatever, you know. Like,
not the Silmarillion.
High frame rate version too. You know.
Oh, like, I love those high frame rates. My eyes need to be satiated.
Yeah. So Dom, where are you? Yeah, let's know your rating.
So I think, like, a few of the songs do so much of the heavy lifting for me. Like, Hours is my anthem. But there were so many songs that, like, at first when you guys were talking about them, I'm like, oh, shit, I forgot to listen to that. But then I remembered I just forgot it. Because, like, they just... There's, like, 5 versions of Superman. Like, Innocent and Haunted sound the exact same to me. But all that to say, I think that the Dear Johns and the Hours and the Last Kisses make this... unforgettable album. So I will give it a 5.5.
What?
6.
4. Out of 10?
5.
Oh. What? What?
Out of 10. The metric is ex-boyfriends that you dated for 2 weeks, but now you're incredible friends and creative collaborators.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be in Happy Medium Club or Heaven.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The release.
Dom, thank you so much for indulging us. What a fun time. Glad I could change your mind on that one song. But, like, never grow up. So, like, what would you like to plug?
Well, you can find my newsletter, which will feature Michael Lamentato. And, well, before that, you guys are my family, and I would die for all of you. And thank you guys for having me. Seriously. Aww. You're my brother.
This is like the end of a Fast and the Furious movie.
I'm Dom. Dom
and you're Dom.
But you can find me at Happy Medium Club. It's a newsletter that's not really about anything, but it's just something that we do for fun. And it's the biggest newsletter in, I think, North America. And it's really good, and it is deserving of you guys' subscriptions. And if you don't do it, I will kill Michael. So follow me, Happy Medium Club.
Way to get people, no one to subscribe to your newsletter.
Our subscriptions dip to 1. It's just me.
Please kill Michael.
And I also got to plug my co-friend, collaborator, best friend, brother, uncle, Joel Moisa.
Co-friend.
Joel, if you're listening to this, I love you so much. You're the only straight man I know that shaved your butt, and that's incredible. But yeah, he and I started the Young Club together, and we would love it if you would check it out.
I don't shave my butt. Okay, so, like, let's... But, like, let's... yeah, check that out. Check out Fast and the Furious. Dom is in there. That's pretty cool. So thank you so much, Dom. What would you like to play us out with? Like, you can follow us at IBMTLTT on Instagram and TikTok. You follow Michael at Lemon Taco on Instagram and Threads. You follow Harper at harping about on Instagram threads and Letterboxd.
I'm not on threads. I haven't been on Twitter in over a in like a decade, so there, I feel like there's no reason for me to
I haven't been on Twitter in over a day. Can't get enough. But yeah, like harping about, check out her reviews of Fast and the Furious and stuff. This is so great. Dom, what would you like to play us out with?
Superman.
I'm no Superman.
You asked.
All right. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a bad day. I guess.
Yeah,
I
guess.
It clicks.
Dark and Superman.